when Mike said we'd do critical instead of angry, I thought that's a weird way to do it. Mike constantly is talking about the way, you know, the straight way, the truth way, and so thought maybe you would get that, but I'll have to think of something else. Anybody here enjoy being criticized? We don't. It's painful, and it's not something that we like. There are a few academic types who try to point out that actually it's benefit in being criticized. Number one, you know that somebody's either hearing or watching. Another thing is it gives you opportunity to have dialogue. It makes you find out some places where you need to do perhaps some correction. And I think as you read those things and hear those things, you just kind of go, blah, 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 blah. You know, it hurts to be criticized. And we've talked ourselves into believing that there's this thing called constructive criticism. How much of that constructive criticism is really, truly constructive? A lot of times it comes from somebody who's telling you that this is the way it's going to be. And because that comes out of the workplace where it has to be done that way, we typically try to carry that over to other areas of our lives, our families and our spiritual relationships. And it becomes very damaging and very painful. Jesus addresses this issue in the Sermon on the Mount and in this section from Luke that we're considering and calling the Sermon on the Plain. It's from Luke chapter 6, beginning in verse 39. He also told them this parable. Can the blind lead the blind? Will they not both fall into a pit? The student is not above the teacher, but everyone who is fully trained will be like their teacher. Jesus creates this image here. Let's say you go on vacation and there's this peak that you want to climb. It's a dangerous climb. And they introduced you to your guide and your guide is blind. Are you going to go? Now, it's not really politically correct in this era to talk about blind guides. If the taxi driver pulled up and the taxi driver is blind, you're going to get in the cab? Jesus is saying, we don't let somebody who can't see lead us physically. And then he's going to address it even more fully in the next few verses. Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, brother, let me take this speck out of your eye, when you yourself fail to see the plank in your own eye? You hypocrite. First take the plank out of your eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. Tomorrow morning, you have LASIK surgery scheduled. This person comes in the room to do that, and they've got a giant picket that's just sticking out of their head. And they're going to do this intricate surgery on you. You're not going to allow that to happen. It's just silly. And that's what Jesus is saying here. Elton Trueblood has written a book called The Humor of Christ. And he points out a number of places where Jesus says humorous things. We kind of have a tendency to say that Jesus is humorless, and that really isn't the case. You kind of have to get into the language to understand that completely and fully. But in this situation, it's clearer than that. When he talked about the blind guides, when he talked about the plank in the eye, that original audience probably snickered or at least would have some kind of reaction. They were just like, that's silly. It doesn't make any sense at all. And yet, we allow people to make us feel bad. We allow people to damage us. We allow people to influence our relationship with God, who frequently are blind or so seriously impaired that they need to be taking care of their own situation. It's extremely encouraging to me when I think about criticism to look at Jesus, because Jesus is perfect, absolutely perfect. Did that protect him from criticism? No. There are plenty of people, plenty of times, plenty of opportunities where an extreme groups are making great trouble for Jesus and they're highly critical of him. It just goes to show you that there is going to be criticism. You can't do it well enough that nobody will criticize. It isn't possible. The old country preacher who says, where there's a light, there's going to be bugs. And that's the reality of it. If you stand out in any way, there's going to be a negative reaction there. Now, that doesn't change the fact that it hurts. Have you ever had criticism from a total stranger that hurt? Why is that? This person doesn't know you. Maybe it's somebody that you've just had an encounter with, maybe a road rage kind of thing, or something in a grocery store, or those kind of situations, and you leave that situation feeling badly about yourself when you've allowed somebody else to make a judgment about you. Criticism is very complex, and a lot of times it's tied back to what we've experienced in our lives and what other people have told us, and so it's certainly not something that we would try to do today to break that all down. But we often don't fully understand why it is that it hurts so badly. It's important to point out, though, last week we talked about judgment, that forming opinions. Today we're talking about criticism, and next week we'll talk about who should you listen to. And really, the criticism part becomes a bridge between judgment and allowing someone to teach us and lead us. We have to be very careful about who we give that opportunity to. Jesus is criticized, and he handles it brilliantly. This is tax time, and so I'm not going to take time to read these passages, but you may remember that Jesus is challenged in Matthew chapter 17, ask if he pays the temple tax. Peter is asked, does your master pay the temple tax? And he says he does. They need to pay their tax, so how do they pay their taxes? Jesus tells Peter, go throw a line in. Catches a fish. There's a 4-drachma coin in there. And he says, okay, that's pay for your tax and my tax. Would you like to pay your taxes that way? Another time, they come to Jesus and charitably trying to trap him in Matthew chapter 22. Is it right to pay taxes to Caesar? And they think they've come up with a really good one this time. Because if he says no, they're going to run to Pilate and say, this guy is going against the Pharaoh, the Caesar. He's going against the king. He's going against the government. If he says yes, then the people are going to be disappointed. So we finally caught him. Jesus says, give me a coin. Whose picture is that? Caesar. Give to Caesar what's Caesar's. Give to God what's God's. And you can just see the look of disappointment on their faces. We thought we were going to have a way. And when we have criticism in our lives, we'd love to be able to handle it with some kind of supernatural power, like the coin. Or we'd love to be able to handle it with some kind of brilliant idea, some brilliant statement like Jesus has in the connection with given to Caesar. But yet we're left with much fewer resources, and we frequently can't handle it quite that directly. Jesus finally gets enough in Matthew chapter 23, and he addresses the Pharisees. He's going to just scorch them. And I won't go through all of those things that he says about them. But he says to them that they are blind guides, blind men. You just can't see it. You just don't get it. Jesus is trying to help us with the criticism that we receive in our lives. Now, this passage is written from the standpoint of the person doing the criticizing. And if this is a trap that you fall into, the first thing is to figure it out for yourself. What's wrong in your life? Is there anything in your life that needs to be fixed? Is there anything in your personality? Is there anything in your spiritual walk that needs to be improved? Okay, there is. I'm going to take care of that first. And I think the reverse holds as well. Somebody comes to you and says, I think you need to do this. It's fair to say back to them, but what about the plank? What about the plank that's in your eye? When you have that fixed and repaired, then come back to me and we'll talk. We hear so many things that are negative. I've read over and over again that it takes 8 compliments to neutralize one criticism. Now, is there anybody in this room that gets 8 compliments to each criticism? I imagine if you reverse that, you might say, yeah, that fits for me. We may get 8 criticisms to one compliment. That might be a lot better match. We need people telling us good things. And when we devolve into the place where we're sharing all the bad things, sharing all the negative things, things can really get bad. I'm going to jump on to the end. We're getting near our time. I would like to talk about our inner critic, but our inner critic is just, again, so complex, but that it exists, and there's this voice inside of us that criticizes what we do, and we have to learn how to deal with those things as well. We mentioned God is love this morning, and that wasn't planned necessarily. It was just kind of something that emerged. But in John chapter 13, verse 5, Jesus says, this is how people are going to know that you're my disciples. If you love one another. And he's saying that we ought to be able to look at a church family. That we ought to be able to look at Christianity worldwide. We ought to be able to look at a couple of Christians who are interacting. And what you would see there are loving, understanding, cooperating relationships. Now, if we went out into the world and asked people who are classified as unchurched, do you see that in Christianity? We wouldn't get many yeses. We haven't done a good job of loving each other. And one of the reasons is we've been frequently so willing to slide into that easy trap of criticizing every little thing. In Romans chapter 14, verse 4, who are you to judge someone else's servant? I used this one last week, but I want to use the end this time. To their own master, servants stand or fall, and they will stand, for the Lord is able to make them stand. It's not up to us to straighten people out. It's not up to us to fix everything that's there. And I know some of you will say, well, aren't there places in the Bible that say we should restore people? Well, there's a great deal of difference between someone who has left the spiritual path and is so immersed in sin that they're losing their soul. Yeah, that's a different thing than what we frequently are doing in our constant petty criticism. It gets directed that way. Let's go to slide 19. Says simply, be an encourager. The world has plenty of critics already. Just a secular expression, but when you think about it, it really is true. If you want to be a person of power, be an encourager. If you want to be a person who has influence, be an encourager. If you want to be the person who has the kind of family you'd like to have, be an encourager. And above all of those things, if you'd like to be a soul winner, be an encourager. What would it mean in your workplace if you encouraged? What would it mean if you didn't respond the way everybody else did? But instead of getting down, instead of being critical, instead of joining in on those critical situations against other people or the people that are giving you instructions or whatever. Instead, if you were that person who pointed out some encouraging part of that process. Aristotle, a long time ago, says there's only one way to avoid criticism. Do nothing, say nothing, and be nothing. We hide away and say, I don't want to take any chances on having any criticism. Jesus came to this world knowing that he had a job to do, a mission that he had to do, that people would be so critical of that mission that they would ultimately rise up and take his life to try to stop him from doing that. But it was important enough that he did it anyway. I'd like to end this morning with the thing written by Theodore Roosevelt. It's called The Man in the Arena, and you may have heard it before, but it's something that is a good motivation for all of us. It's not the critic who counts. Not the man who points out how the strong man stumbles or where the doer of deeds could have done them better. The credit belongs to the man who is actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, who errs, who comes up short again and again, because there is no effort without error and shortcoming, but who does actually strive to do the deeds, who knows great enthusiasms, the great devotions, who spends himself in a worthy cause, who at the best, in the end, the triumph of high achievement, and at the worst, if he fails, at least he fails daring greatly, so that his place shall never be with those cold and timid souls who neither know victory nor defeat. Would you guess from that Theodore Roosevelt was ever criticized? Yeah, he's had that. He understands that. And he gets what's going on here. Jesus, as he teaches us, he says, make sure before you listen that this person can see. Make sure before you listen that this person doesn't have this overwhelming fault. And so he puts us in a situation where we get to make very strong judgments about whether we allow somebody to influence our life or not. And it's a choice that we get to make. And it's a choice that God will aid and help us to stand. This morning we offer an invitation. If there's any need or any reason why you might need to respond to that, we'd be glad to help you in any way possible. If you'd just let that be known while we stand and sing together.